You've got to show up. You have to act like you are the executive in the room, even when you're the intern in the room, because that's what you want. So if you're asking for that and what you want, then show up at it. Nobody told you you can't have a voice at the table.
Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Oz Rashid. This is the show where we learn from executives and founders, people who are disrupting and changing their companies and industries, and find out what they uniquely see that others don't when it comes to identifying top talent. If you're a first-time listener, welcome to the show. I'm very excited to have you. If you're a long-time listener, we appreciate your support. Please make sure to subscribe to us on Apple and Spotify. Today, we are joined by a very special guest. Today, we are joined by Megan Wilkinson. Megan is the VP of Strategic Client Groups at a little company called Oracle. How are you doing, Megan?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you doing?
I'm
Thanks
doing
for having me.
Yeah, you got it. I am so excited to chat with you. And titles, when it comes to business, are one of my favorite things because they can mean a lot of different things at a lot of different companies. So let's talk about VP of Strategic Accounts for Verizon at Oracle. That is an absolute mouthful. I'd like to better understand how you see your role. What's the core scope of your role? How do you see you impacting your customers? Help me understand it from your perspective, what a VP of Strategic Accounts does.
Sure. In a nutshell, I can see we like sports in the back, but I'm going to use football. It is the quarterback of the account in essence.
Okay.
So I have the unique opportunity to work across all of the individuals that interface with the Verizon account, and I align and get all of us to act as one core team, and then we interface with the client. And the objective is that we make the client more successful day in and day out, and we try and bring the right conversations and the right opportunities and the right types of discussions to the table to help minimize the noise that is consistently coming into those larger kind of companies and help streamline what's really impactful for them. So it's a really cool job and it's never a dull moment, always different every day.
I love that. As the quarterback, are you the one who is like, are you pre-sale, post-sale? Are you going out to dinners? Are you doing relationship management? Like I'm trying to understand kind of the dynamics of the team that you have there. So anything you can tell us there?
Yeah, absolutely. In the Oracle land, I am in the sales organization. But that said, I handle everything from pre to post because whatever the client needs, I always say at the end of the day, it can hit my radar and I'll help you navigate the internal workings. So a lot of my day to day is building the relationships and helping navigate the complexities of Verizon to help the team succeed from both net new sales as well as continuing the momentum across the account. But if there's anything that is risk their conversation or having issues or poor customer experience, et cetera, then we get them in a grind with our ops teams and our product teams to help resolve conversations. So
I love that.
It's kind of a myriad of hats.
You brought up the football analogy. So do you know football pretty well?
Oh, I know. Okay, now we're going to be dangerous. But yes, I live and breathe it with the family. So
okay, here's where we're going to go. If you had to pick a current or former NFL quarterback to describe your style as the VP of Strategic Accounts.
Oh, you're going to go there.
Anyone come to mind? I can give you some examples, right? Tom Brady putting in a lot of prep work, calm, cool, and collected, always delivers. Patrick Mahomes, wildly talented, and just does things that others can't, you know, from a physical perspective. I don't know. Are there some other parallels? Any that you see?
Yeah, I think all of those. So I'm going to use we have a big Bills family. So we'll go with a combination between Josh and Mahomes because you watched the game yesterday. It was a good game for the Bills fans. But I would say I put in a lot of preparation, but I always take on those things that people don't want to do, haven't been done before, are risky, or say the art of impossible. So that kind of is a good representation of who and how I am.
Jeez,
day in, day out.
Fantastic analogy. If we combine Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, that quarterback might
have
never
to start
lose.
A new team.
Yes, I see it. So drew you into this space in the first place and the company in particular? Were you always in telecom or is this something that you gravitated towards?
Not always. So outside, when I graduated undergrad, I went into hospitality and I had my own event planning company for a while, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. My master's degree in criminal justice actually landed me in telco about a decade later, which is just kind of an odd, like, criminal justice to telco. But I've been in it ever since. So I was in that for about a decade, leading a lot of different types of teams and organizations. And what really brought me over to the company I am now and why I decided to go honestly back into large corporate arena was a lot about the people and the type of role and who I got to interface with day in and day out. So
Love that.
that's what kind of got me back.
So, I mean, we talked a little bit before the pod, and from what I can tell, you're obsessed with business, much like I am, and how it works, right? I like to make a joke that, like, as an entrepreneur, when I walk into a business, like whether it be a general store or a cafe or whatever it is, I'm kind of like the Terminator in that I'm like assessing everything. Like, what's the ambiance here? What's the price structure here? What's it? So, like, I'm constantly thinking about things from a business implication perspective. Has that always been the case for you? Is that something that you like kind of gravitated towards later on in life? Or was that business something you were interested in at a young age? Maybe you started lemonade stands or anything like that?
Since I was a little girl. I did have a lemonade stand. I still have pictures of it because it was like perfect in my opinion. Spent a lot of time on the decoration of the whole lemonade stand. I had this big, I made it with my dad. But no, I did lawn mowing, I did piano lessons, I babysat. So it was always like just in my DNA, I think. Business makes a lot of sense to my brain. I also think it's part that I have a much easier way of discussing business with people than I do like diving in on personal if I don't know you. So it's just a natural kind of evolution. But I think it's a fascinating thing to talk about.
Yeah, so a couple of different things there. One is when I have people, our company, we do a lot of recruitment, and we work across, industries and different countries and different sizes of companies. And so I tell people when they come here, especially if they have very little kind of professional experience, is that when you go to a cocktail party and somebody, you're talking and somebody's like, "Oh yeah, I run the supply chain at DHL." And you usually like, "Oh great," because you don't really have any follow-up from there because you don't have a lot of context, right? But then instead you can say something, "Oh, are you a 3PL organization?" Or, "What's kind of like your operational excellence and standards there?" Like, understanding the different components of how different jobs work within different businesses has always been something that I look at as a big reason why you come and work at a companies like ours, because you just get exposed to telecom and retail and financial services and media and all these different things. And so I like to tell people that instead of paying and getting an MBA, right, from a school in 2 years, you can come here and get paid, and in 1 year get a similar type, business interface. And so, very, 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 very parallel there in terms of our passion. The other thing I'd ask you is, my daughters too have naturally gravitated towards entrepreneurship. They too have open lemonade stands. But one of the things I told them is, okay, like you've done this a couple of times, like we got to start to differentiate your lemonade stand, right? We got to start to look at maybe buy the lemonade, you get a cookie with it, or create signage that draws people in, or offer a referral program. Did you do anything to like, what was your differentiator like in terms of your lemonade stand when you were a kid? Did you do anything unique and different?
Well, the type of lemonade, so it was country lemonade.
Ooh.
I don't know if you know what that is,
I
but
do.
when I was growing up, that was like the more expensive powder lemonade than just like the Kool-Aid lemonade. And then I made cookies with my mom, so that was kind of a thing, which I think in today's day and landscape that might not be like totally allowed, but I had like it was lemonade and
I don't
cookies.
want to live in a
So it
world
was
where I
kind
can't get a cookie at a lemonade stand. I just got to tell you
of, I
that.
agree, I agree.
High
So
quality lemonade product. I'm sure that the pricing had to line up with that. Incredible margins. I wish I would have been able to go to your lemonade stand.
it was fun. It was fun
I love it.
for
So you
sure. So
mentioned also to me that advising and being a mentor is super important to you. When I ask you for the people or the person in particular who comes into mind who had the biggest impact on you professionally, does somebody come to mind? Is there somebody there?
Yeah, for sure. I think her name's Lisa, and she was an executive I got to work for and then has become a dear friend throughout the years. But she just trusted in me and she just believed in me and she opened some doors I mean, I had to earn them. She would tell you earned every stripe of them. But I really believe that without somebody taking a risk on somebody, you don't usually get to where you get. You have to take a risk in yourself too. But she believed in me. And so she taught me a lot. She was really just influential. She was one of those people when she walks into a room, it was just her energy was infectious. She held herself and her team to very high standards, so it was really cool to be around. And we just complemented each other really well. It doesn't always happen. I've been around a lot of inspiring leaders. I've had the opportunity to work for some that I don't like, which is sometimes when you learn the best. But when you find somebody you just can click with and you almost finish their sentences, it's magic. And you usually don't realize that. I didn't until years later when you're down the road going, gosh, that was a darn good chapter that we had together in door.
Shout
So,
out to Lisa. Let's take advantage of that. Okay. I want to ask you a
yeah.
question in regards to what you just said to me. So I meet a
Sure.
lot of, people early in their career, youngsters, Gen Z, millennial, whatever you want to call them. Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll come to me and say, my manager, my leader, like they don't trust me, or, I'm not given the autonomy I need. And listen, there are some leaders that are just control freaks and they kind of take a one size fits all. But I think a lot of the time, especially the more senior and experienced leaders with professional maturity, a lot of times what you're getting from them is what they see out of you. And now you talked about the fact that you earned that trust from Lisa for her to be able to give you that autonomy that everybody wants. I'm interested, what advice would you give somebody early in their career that wants to earn that trust with a new manager, a new leader, somebody they want to impress upon? What are your kind of, what would be your game plan to tell somebody that wanted to make that impression?
Yeah, sure. It's an interesting question. Coming to somebody that is, I never sit still and I always want something tomorrow type of thing. And I was very much like that. But one, you don't want to hear it when you're young, but age does come with wisdom and maturity. And you've got to be consistent. You've got to show up. You have to act like you are the executive in the room, even when you're the intern in the room. Because that's what you want. So if you're asking for that and the what you want, then show up at it. And I would say the other thing, and I think it's a lot harder when you're younger, although I struggle with it even as I get older, is you have to build your confidence and you have to walk in that you have a voice at the table. Nobody told you you can't have a voice at the table. So I always walked in a room, regardless of the titles, and I had my facts. I knew what I wanted to ask. And I also challenged myself to listen more than I talked because those people are in seats for a reason. You may not like them. You may not totally agree with their vantage points. You may not think your manager is giving you the right insights, but they're doing it for a reason. And unless you've had the track record or you have the experience, you don't have the authority yet to say that. I mean, listen, I got frustrated with managers all the time. But I can look back on some of them and say, okay, some of that was fair game and spot on. And then ask for feedback. If you're getting frustrated, ask for feedback. Okay, I feel like I don't have a voice or you're not trusting me or I'm being micromanaged. Like, is that your perception or is that the reality? And just have open dialect and communication because I think that's the biggest thing. Communication is professional or personal, sometimes the hardest thing for us to overcome, but yeah, end of day, you have to respect. You have to respect those in the seats and learn enough before you can make those decisions. So,
I love that. So some of the things I caught there are be a good listener, be confident, ask for feedback, communicate early and often. So I think those are some really good ones. Some things that I was thinking about, in terms of whenever I have somebody ask me this type of advice, some things that I would say are set the tone early, like the impression you make up front. If you show up late, really early on in your tenure, then guess what? You're branded with this person that's late. So be
That's right.
prepared, show up on time, right? Ask good questions, right? So you want to set that tone and set that first impression, because otherwise you're going to have to be re-earning that benefit of the doubt throughout your tenure with that person. So I think that's always really, really important. Doing the little things right. Like I think a lot of times people want to, I'm going to, win this big project, or I'm going to like come up with this amazing answer in a meeting is the way to like really stand out. And sure, that stuff's great, but ultimately, it's actually a buildup of doing a lot of the little things, right? Taking the right notes, sending the right email, asking the right question and follow up. Like that can be really, really key. So I think those little things are right. And then this is one that I learned really early in my career. Learn what's important to your boss and then work on that. Mm-hmm. So whatever like your boss is being graded on or what they know, you know, is a key initiative or a key project. And if you have that ability to get your hands on that stuff, I think that that can be a really big deal. Because if you make your boss look good, that's going to pay to you tenfold, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad. I hope people got something out of that. Let's talk a little bit on the fun side because, you know, this isn't a podcast that we're just going to go all business all the time. I want to talk a little bit about living in different parts of the world. Okay. So lived in different places. And so I want to talk about, here's what I want to do. Let's do a lightning round real quick. I want you to say something about each of these areas that people who haven't lived there wouldn't know, either bad or good. Okay. So let's start here. You live down under. You lived in Australia.
I did.
Tell us something that somebody who hasn't lived there wouldn't know about living in Australia.
It's so similar to the United States, but also culturally vastly different.
Okay, explain.
They live to work. It's like reversed, right? So they make a lot of money in order to do what they want to do personally, but they have a fine line and they really invest in their personal life. And here, I think we're getting better about it in the States, but we sometimes hit the grind because that's just our culture. It's just a different universe of sorts. But we relate more than you would think.
Okay.
Like we're pretty similar.
That's good. Yeah. What about Italy?
There's not ever a boring part to Italy. What would people not know? Pistachio gelato is actually the best thing in the world, I think.
Pistachio gelato. Where did you live in?
Yeah. Europe? I lived in Florence.
Okay.
It was great. Yeah.
What is the professional world like in Florence?
Italians move on their own pace. You know, like they'll say the store is going to be open at 10, then it doesn't open until 1. You know, they might take a long lunch that doesn't reopen until 3. They're just kind of on their own schedule. Like there's always the scaffolding on the buildings that, you know, 100 years later, they're finally finishing the church. And it's beautiful though. I mean, because they just are like, whatever, like we're going to live, you know, the beautiful life as they call it. So no, I think a lot of the, what I would coin corporate land is more in the Milans or the colder places. I think the countrysides are for the artists and it's why Italy is what it is.
Pistachio gelato. That's an insider tip.
It is. I'm going to have to check that out. Good. Yeah.
London. Now, London is a little bit different in terms of, are they living the beautiful life in London?
The gray drove me nuts in London, honestly. Some of the best Indian food I've ever had in my life. And I've been to India, so I can say that. It's not really good food, though. And no offense to the London people that are.
No, listen, we're just going to be, we're an equal opportunity podcast here. there's only so much bangers and mash I can have. I enjoy a good fish and chips, but. You know, it's not their not their cuisine. Now, to your point, it's the second best place for Indian food, so, opposed to somewhere in India, I assume. Like, it has a lot of great Indian food. Do you have, like, a favorite dish for Indian food? What do you order when you go to a place in London?
Chicken tikka masala is always, like, a staple because it's so different depending on the flavorings and the spices that go into it. Some is a little more creamy, some is not. So it's kind of – that's, like, if you're going to judge what part of India it's being made from.
That's good.
Pretty much what I can.
Good insight. Yeah. And then lastly, your current home of Dallas.
Dallas, Texas. Oh gosh. What would people not know about Dallas, Texas? Probably it has some of the kindest people, but also culturally very different than where I've lived in a lot of parts of the States. And Dallas does get to hang their hats on. They do have the best steak so far. I've had a lot of good steaks, but like these people breathe. Steakhouses in Dallas, Texas. So,
and quite literally hang their hats on the way into the steakhouse.
Quite literally. Yes. Quite literally. That happens. Yeah.
Awesome. So, all right. Listen, we got to pay bills here. We got to talk talent. I know that you've hired for your teams. You've been involved in lots of interviews. Yeah. So I want to dive into it. Let's talk in terms of core hiring philosophy, right? You're the quarterback. You know, what are you looking for in wide receivers, offensive linemen, and running backs on these teams that you got to work together? What's kind of your core hiring philosophy?
Passion and drive is always part of it for sure. like, let's put that they've passed the resume and they've like gone through the core things that you kind of need. But you can teach people most anything if they have an innate want to do it and they have a passion. Polish, they need to have been polished. So, and that can be in a lot of different forms. Are they willing to have some humbleness about them to explain, like, we've all failed in our lives, right? We've all learned, we've all fallen down, however you want to say it. I view that as a positive thing. Some people shy away from that. I lead teams that have to fail every single day. So if it's like super uncomfortable, that might be a challenge. And then I want them to at least have an idea of what they want, even if that's going to change in 6 months or 3 years or whatever. What do they want to get out of it? Why are they coming? Because I'm there to invest in them. I'm not there to see them out in 2 months type of thing. So I want to know, like, what do they want to get out of it? Have they thought through why? Because anyone can have a job. We can all get a job, right?
Yeah.
But do you like have a passion for what you're waking up for? Those are the people that I want on the team.
So it can be tough in an interview to understand if somebody's passionate, right? So what would you, what are some things that you might do in an interview to try to draw out the passion in somebody, whether it be for what they're doing professionally or it might be something else?
Sure. It depends on kind of the role, honestly, at times, right? So for instance, if you're in sales, I usually ask them what success means to them. Because if some form of money is not in that conversation, meaning like, I've always wanted to go have floor seats at this basketball game, right? I'm staring at your basketball. That's why I said it. Or I've always wanted this car. I want to provide for my family, or I just want to make a lot of money. If none of those are kind of in that, I'm like, maybe sales is not the best place for you right now. Passion is usually like, what do you do when you're not working? Like, what really do you love to do? Like, and if they're college, that can be different, right? But like, what do you spend your free time doing? And I always am interested in, it could be reading books, right? That's cool. What kind of books do you read then? Or it could be, I like running, or I like hanging with the friends. But usually if like, they don't have a clear answer to that, it means they haven't found their passion yet. And they're still seeking it out, which is an okay thing too, because you can't have all A bench players. So then you have to balance your bench. So you have to make sure you have a few A plus players and then enough that you can bring them all up. But if you have like the CBs, that's a lot of work for a leader to get them all up to the A's. And I tend to like all A's, even if it's A minuses, right? So, so you just have to gauge like, and where are you able as a leader to invest your time? Because you can't spread yourself too thin, because then everybody falls down too. So
yeah, passion's really important for me too, because I feel like if you got that fire in you, then it's on me to kind of ignite that fire. But I need to know there's things and that you care about and that you're passionate about. There's some people that are just, you know, blasé or apathetic about most things. So one of the things I like to ask is, you know, tell me something that you're really passionate about that you're an expert in, and explain it to me in, you know, 1 minute or less, as if I knew nothing and I needed to learn about it. Right. And so there's a few different things that I get from that. Is one, you can start to tell in their energy and excitement, like, oh, I love photography and here's why I love it and here's what's amazing about it and here's how I got into it. Right. But then you can also understand like how they frame their thought and how they, how they convey something that they know well that someone else doesn't. You know, can they take something complex and make it simple? I think that's a really key skill, no matter your job, certainly as a manager, but really any job, like being able to take something that you're deep in and help others understand. And so that gives me a good mix of like what they'll be in the role, what they're passionate about. Do they have passion? Can they get ignited? So yeah, I love that. What about you? Do you have like do you have a core question that you love to ask that like really just kind of unlocks things with a candidate?
Ooh, that's a good question, actually. I was going to say, I always ask what success means to them.
Okay.
I usually ask them if they could go anywhere in the world, no expenses paid, where would they go and what would they do? And what I'm trying to derive out of that is what excites them? Like, what do they get out of things? What's their background or their culture they're looking for? And if you took all reservations off of them, how big or small do they think, right? Because some people could go, oh, I want to go to this like restaurant right around. Some people are like, I want to get on a private jet and I want to fly here and I want to do this. So it usually gives me a landscape of like, okay, here we go. And then, selfishly, it gives me like ideas for my back pocket of where I want to go adventure next.
I
So.
love it.
Finding the right talent for your team doesn't have to be a struggle. Meet Aon Hire, the world's first hiring experience management platform designed to transform the way you hire. Powered by AI, Aon Hire takes the hassle out of every step in the process. From smart resume analysis to customized interview questions, it saves you time, money, and effort. Plus, with real-time insights from every interview, you can quickly identify top candidates, reduce turnover, and stay on budget. And forget about note-taking. Aon Hire takes care of that for you. Ready to revolutionize your hiring process? Visit aonhire.com and get started today.
So I'm going to ask you, if you had no reservations, no nothing, unlimited budget, where would you go?
Hands down, always I will go to Italy. Like, if it was just a quick 24-hour trip. I don't care where you drop me in Italy. I will figure out what to do. I'll go visit a fun cafe, probably do some shopping, and I'll come right back to work. But I've always wanted to go to a lot of parts of the world, so it would probably be one of my bucket lists, like Greece or, goodness, the Maldives are on my bucket list right now. I have a few. Africa, I've always wanted to go on a safari, so
Those sound like good ones. All right, let me try and answer. So,
Okay.
when you say no budget issues, I
No
immediately start to
budget.
think of the most expensive places. So I'm like, all right, I want to go to
Always.
Monaco. I want to go
Ooh,
to
yep.
Cannes. I want to go to Dubai, right? And so those are the things.
Yep,
I've
I
always
like
wanted
it.
to go to Japan. But if you ask me, the first thing that came into my head was New Zealand. And why I would go to New Zealand is it's a long flight, so I got to fly first class. But then I also want to go explore all the different terrains. I've heard that it's very America friendly. And that
Yes.
just seems like a place that would have a good mix of nature and culture and learnings. It wouldn't maybe be as historic as some of the places in Europe or Latin America
Yeah.
or Asia, but I just feel like I've heard a lot of great things about it, and that's where I'd love to go. Is that a good answer? Would you hire me?
I would, and I've been there, so that was a good answer. I like that.
Yes. Guys, I'm going to work with
Then you
Oracle.
have to decide if you want to go to the North Island or the South Island or
Well,
both.
I'm going to have to talk to somebody that knows the area well, and I guess I got one now in Megan, so
I
I'll
only
try.
went to the South, but I think it's the better island,
Okay.
so
I love that.
yeah,
What
I
about a
love
memorable interview experience? And if you got like a funny one or a bad one, that's ideal, but maybe it's you interviewing or maybe you interviewing somebody. Do you have any kind of like, when I say memorable interview experience, something that comes to
it.
mind?
I mean, probably the most interesting experience I've personally had was with the FBI.
Oh boy.
That was an interesting one. Because I had never thought a lie detector test would be so hard, like you're like, oh, I'm so cool, calm, and collected. And it was fascinating. It was just a fascinating experience in general. So that's probably one of my top ones.
A lie detector, huh? Gosh.
I know, I was like, goodness gracious. But yeah, I mean, yeah, there's always when you said you've never seen it, you usually end up seeing it at some point. You're like, oh, okay, got it. Here we go.
What
Yeah.
about when you miss on somebody? Because we all miss sometimes, right? Like, is there a common theme you look back on, or maybe something that you learned throughout the course of your career when you're interviewing to keep an eye out for?
Yeah, and I think that comes with experience. Experience, but also reflecting. If you as a leader don't take time to reflect, that like your inner self, then you never get those golden nuggets that you're asking about right now. What I've learned is to bring diversity of thought into the conversation. Because usually when I'm missing, it's my own filters that are causing a like what I would say is a judgment lapse, or we all are in different phases and stages of life at times, right? And those can be for a week at a time, they can be for years at a time. It doesn't mean you can't come and do your job, but you have like filters that change throughout the seasons. So it's really important to get other feedback to the conversation. But you're gonna miss still because we're humans, we're hiring humans, we're not hiring robots. And I still think you'd miss if we're hiring robots, but sometimes you just miss. Like your radar is just off. It's just like, damn, I thought they were going to be good. or you miss on a good candidate and then you see them down the road and you're like, oh, I wish I would have gotten one. So you miss, but that's life. So I think as long as you're willing to learn from it and have some humble pie around it, then
you'd be successful.
It's fair. Yeah.
All right, last hiring question. How do you get people to know what it's like to work for you in the interview? Like, are you open about conveying this is what you can expect or this is what it'll be like, or do they typically find out post-hire?
That's a really good question. That's probably changed throughout the course of my career. Because I used to be pretty, like, you're not going to get to know Megan during the interview is the best way to say it. And some of the best advice I got is you have to be vulnerable with your people or they're going to think you're a robot. Like, they'll think you're, you know, perfect, which is like far from the truth. So I intentionally allow for questions and time for that. Sometimes they don't have any, which is also a, which is also always interesting to me.
Sure.
Because everybody has questions. But I try and be myself because it's a two-way street interviewing. I mean, I want the candidate, but as much as I want the candidate, they have to. And you can usually feel it out like within 5 minutes. You're like, oh, this is like pulling teeth right now, right? We all like can kind of read that situation. But I try. And I try and give some of my like little nuggets of, I don't know, just how I act. Like I'm a pretty, like what you see is what you get. I usually give a little bit of explanation to the role of what to expect. And then I usually will say a few things like, are you good with change? Are you good with, you know, constant evaluation of certain things, whatever is on the radar? Because if they say yes or no to some of those, it will give me a litmus test of whether it's going to work with the team. So yeah, usually I hope at least 85% they're walking in the door like, okay, we at least feel comfortable with like Megan's style. We might not totally understand the company yet, but we at least understand like what I'm walking into.
Yeah, interesting comment on the people that don't have questions. Let me give a bit of advice to everybody out there. Definitely have questions. Like, because here's the thing. There's a couple different things. To me, there's one of two things going and neither are good, right? Either you don't have an internal narrative. So like I can't have a 30-minute conversation with something and something's not coming up that I'm like, oh, I want to understand that better, or I want to dive deeper, or I did research beforehand and I didn't know this coming in. You know, I've had people tell me, and listen, I can be pretty loquacious and comprehensive, but I've had people say, oh, no, you pretty much answered anything I would have asked. And I'm like, really? It's got to be something that you want to dig into. Or it's a confidence thing. Like they don't feel confident being able to ask something challenging, or maybe they did have something that they want to uncover and they don't ask it. So my recommendation is always come like with like 5 questions prepared in your head, if even just to show that you're prepared and look good. And then maybe you get some of them crossed off. And if that doesn't happen, then you come up with questions during the interview. Like it's really important to show your engagement in that situation. So I know sometimes it can be, well, you know, I feel pretty good about everything I need to know, but there's always something you should dig deeper in there. And actually, do you have any more questions? This is actually a bigger question. It's like, how interested are you in this? And what don't you yet understand?
That's fair.
So
yeah, that's totally fair.
I think that's good feedback for anybody listening, and I would definitely keep that in mind. All right, let's talk a little bit about day in the life. What are you working on right now that you're excited about?
Ooh, without disclosing too much, because I can't.
Okay. You don't work for the FBI. It's just Oracle. So just...
I know. Just but we sure. act, you know. It's transformation. It's how to... So listen, telcos are in a market that's saturated. Our population isn't growing. So the clientele base is what it is and or shrinking. So the competition is all trying to go after a pretty similar set of customers. So it's how do they do that and differentiate themselves? So go back to the lemonade stand idea, right? How do we come with our competition? Because we have some pretty fierce competition too. And look like, hey, why would you give Megan the time of day versus my other counterparts at these companies? So how can I differentiate myself in the conversation? And then how do we help them transform and modernize what they're trying to do? There's some significant pressures economically right now with the telco environment. So what I'm excited is we're in some bigger conversations with them around, you know, how are we going to propel them to the next step? How are we going to keep them at number one? my counterparts on the other accounts might think they're not number one, but I live and breathe Verizon every day. So, yeah, so I'm excited about that because they're big rock strategic initiatives that are hard. They're cumbersome. They take some grit to kind of question and work with the executives and all of their teams. And you get different flavors of that every day. So there's some really interesting things that are starting to like totally kind of meld and come together. And it's a pretty interesting time. So
yeah, I don't know how much you can dive into it, but like, just for anybody who might be wondering, who's listening, what type of services are you, is Verizon providing to Oracle? Is it like phone plans? Is it cloud and network? Like, what is it?
Sure. That's a good question. So we have a myriad with them, but Oracle as a company is in the hyperscaler landscape. So we provide all cloud types of services, whether it's on-prem, so call it the network or infrastructure and hardware that enable the day-to-day runnings of their business, or go put it in the cloud. And a lot of what the technology environments are trying to enable for customers right now is we use it all day, probably, at least I do sometimes, go into ChatGTP, or we're on a web conferencing device right now, right? Or you're picking up your phone, which has to be enabled by a network. So we don't sell the phone or the plans, but we sell the solutioning that enables what you see them doing in the marketplace. So
love that. Yeah. Thank you for clarifying. All right. What is a book or just piece of content in any format that you'd recommend to our listeners?
Ooh, I have so many good books, man.
Pick one here. I'm going to look at mine too. Oh, hi. Exponential Organizations. Hi, Cross.
Okay. The Book of Awesome is probably one I love the best.
All right. Tell us about it.
Well, it's just, it's like, it's an easy, you just like can open it up and it's why something's awesome. Like here's a really random one that I always remember from this book. And don't make fun that I had to learn it from this book, but in your gas gauge in your car, there's a little arrow that tells you what side of the car it's
yes,
on.
Yes, this is true. I got to be honest. I think this
See,
is something everybody
awesome.
Learns later in life. I think I learned this at like 36 or 37. I'm 43 now.
Okay.
And when I saw it, I was like, God, that makes a lot of sense.
See, I read it through the Book of Awesome and they're like, see, that's awesome. There's always something to be grateful for in life. So I love it just because it's like that little snapshot of something. And then the other one I just got done reading is The Power of One More. Mm. And what I love about this one is you can put it into use in professional or personal or individual yourself is just one more, like, one more push up at the gym, one more minute on the treadmill, and one more minute of, you know, gratitude journaling in the morning before you start your day, to one more hug or I love you, never going to hurt, with the family and the kids, one more minute of dedicated attention and active listening, or at work, it's just one more like extra effort, like go the extra mile, like go send that thank you note, right? Or look over that deck one more last time to make sure before you go into that meeting that everything's ticked and tied. Because the people that give the extra 10% or even the 1% these days
tend to be winners.
They tend to be few and far between. Because we make a lot of, we're too busy and there's too much going on and we don't have the time or the effort or energy to do that. And I think we're given the gift of life one time, so why not just give it one more effort, something.
Do you have any TV series or anything? And I gotta be honest with you, I'm totally bringing this up just because I want to bring up a TV show that I watch that I really like, but I want to hear.
Oh, okay.
Are you ready?
Okay, you're not gonna tell me?
I'm gonna tell you. I want to tell Laura, but do you have any TV show or any like series you've seen recently that you really like that you recommend?
Yeah, we have a few, and one of them we are waiting until December 19th to come out. And I'm totally blanking the name of it. I'm going to cheat for a second.
Okay, that's okay. You Google. I'm going to tell you my content.
Okay, what's yours?
Okay. So I just finished The Penguin on Max. Okay?
Ooh, I haven't seen it.
And so it's in the Batman universe, Robert Pattinson.
Okay.
But this isn't like a comic book thing. It's just a really good show. And there's like two or three episodes in the series that are like, I don't know, in my top 50 episodes of all time. It's just so well done. It's with Colin Farrell. And quite frankly, you know, I know a little bit about the Batman lore. Like the Penguin's never been like my favorite villain, right? But they do such a good job with him in this. So highly, highly recommend. Maybe a little bit of recency bias. I think it's my favorite show since Succession. I might have just been because I watched it last night, the final episode, and it was so good. But that is my recommendation for anybody listening who hasn't picked it up. It's on Max. What's your show?
Okay, I like The Penguin, and Succession was phenomenal.
Fantastic.
So we're going to go like way over in the other realm. So it's called Virgin River.
Okay.
It's just a feel-good show, and it's a great, but in so many different regards. And then the other one is Lincoln Lawyer, if you ever saw
the Matthew McConaughey movie. The TV series, right?
The TV series, the new season.
I love this. This is why people come to this podcast. They learn about hiring. They hear about great content. They hear about great books. Love it. All right. Last question before I go to the lightning round, and I do got a good lightning round coming.
Oh, okay.
Tell me some advice you'd give your 20-year-old self that you didn't know then that you know now.
20-year-old self. I would that's a good question. I would tell my 20-year-old self to have patience because it's all going to work out.
Okay.
And it's so hard.
Did you not have patience at that age? Were you constantly always pushing? And then that's
always pushing.
Okay.
Like always thinking like, you know, you got to go build your, and I think part of that is what makes, you know, executives successful. Cause if you don't wake up trying to push the mold, you're an entrepreneur. Like if you don't do that, then you don't get to where you're at. But sometimes it's like, give yourself some grace, like remind yourself how far you've come and what you're doing. And just like be a little kinder. You don't have to go be 45 tomorrow because you will get there. Trust me, you know, type of thing. So I would have told her probably to enjoy her 20s a little bit more. But I mean, I enjoyed my 20s, but.
Yeah, I was going to say, I definitely would not have had to tell 20-year-old Oz that. It might have been, hey, rein it in a little bit, buddy. But yeah, I hear you. Here's what we're going to do. We got our world famous lightning round. Today's topic is Dallas, Texas. So you just got to tell me the first thing that comes to mind when I ask these questions. All right, here we go.
All right.
Best restaurant in Dallas.
Oh, gosh. Monarch.
Monarch. What type of food is it?
It's kind of like a new cuisine steakhouse Italian.
Okay.
It's really cool. It sits at the top of a building. I think it's really decent food. Definitely. Our go-to is Bob's Steakhouse though.
Bob's. Okay. I like that. I'm going to check out Monarch because I come to Dallas all the time. Favorite sporting event to attend in Dallas?
Mavs.
You know, our office is right there in that Victory Plaza area. In fact, in the WeWork right above where you walk in. Yeah, but I hate the Mavericks. I'm just going to be honest. No offense. I'm not trying to.
I don't either, but it's a fun venue to go see a game, and I like basketball. So pick like the team you like and then go to see the team.
My team is the Phoenix Suns, so I'm going to see them go to Dallas. You're right.
There you go.
Favorite city in Texas that's not Dallas?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'd have to say Austin probably.
Why?
Just to visit. Because it's cool. It's like it's got funky shops, local restaurants, scenes. I have some good friends there. So I like it. And it's a different vibe. It's a totally different culture than Dallas is.
For sure. My brother lives there.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Last time you wore a cowboy hat?
It's been a little bit. I would have to say I think I wore a cowboy hat this summer when I went to a concert. There's this outdoor venue concert. So we're going to go with like 3 months.
Only in Texas is it's been a long time and it's been 3 months. What about cowboy boots?
I know.
Is that more recent?
That was probably more recent. Yeah, that might have been 2 months ago. I don't wear a ton of cowboy boots. I'm kind of the non-typical Dallas gal, though I'm from Colorado. But
this is lightning round. I just got to check in, okay? So
that's okay.
I'm going to tell you what, unbeknownst to you, because we used to do this in our company when we were talking to customers, we would write, we would keep a running score of good question, how many times the customer said that, and we would have a little competition. Yeah. And you said good question to me 9 times. So I'm feeling really great about
the
questions I asked. Are you feeling good about it?
I like it. I'm feeling good.
This is going to be
I love it.
This is going to be a hell of a podcast. All our Dallas friends are going to listen to it, and their Monarch is never going to be able to, you know, never going to be able to get a reservation there again because of this.
Good.
Megan, I really appreciate you coming on. It's been fun. Thanks so much. I'm so excited for this episode to come out. I know people are going to love it. Thanks again.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right. Talk to you later.